And welcome back to another Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. I am your host, Steve Cadley, with my co-host and producer extraordinaire, Mr. Andy Lowe.
That's a promotion for you this week. Remember, earlier in the week, you let off as co-host. So I
decided to promote myself and make co-host.
A little self-promotion back to host again.
Right.
Good job.
I need all the boosts I need right now. It's at the end of the summer, right? So, well, happy Labor Day weekend, and we're going to have a great show as we go into this weekend celebrating us hard workers in the world today, which is really what Labor Day is all about, right? Celebrating all the hard work that we do, and particularly you, Andy.
So. I thought it was all about barbecue myself, but that's just me.
Yeah, that's... And that's part of it. That's a little bit. All right. Well, we have a great show. We have Richard Brock and also Lisa Kramer from Lead Life today, and we're excited to talk about this. And we've been talking a lot about marketing automation of late, and I think we have a really interesting story regarding this whole new emerging space. So with that, I'll let Richard introduce himself. Richard, please, if you would, share with us a little bit about Richard Brock.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today. Lead Life Solutions is about 5 years old now. Lisa joined me just prior to starting it, and we came up with the idea together to take advantage of the changing nature of sales, about how people buy differently, how they acquire the information mm-hmm. differently, and how that's forcing salespeople to act differently. So marketing automation, I think, is a result of a change in buying behavior caused by the Internet. It's mm-hmm. not a good idea that people thought they would try to get others to follow. It's not like going to the gym is a good idea.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of like if you fall out of your boat in the lake, either you swim or you drown. And it maybe is a good analogy. The Internet might have thrown us out of our comfortable sales boat, and we have to swim or we will drown. So marketing automation is just an effective way to reach shore quickly.
And so I can see the marketing automation is the way the change is really, it's a reflection of what's happening in the marketplace, and you're capitalizing on that. So, but how did you get here? Where did Richard, how did you start?
Lisa and I both had a background in CRM company. She was the president of a CRM company in Phoenix before she moved here to join me and help me with this idea. And we just saw the times changing. And by way of analogy, CRM does fit with marketing automation, but they're fitted as partners, so to speak, where it's about lead generation. And so CRM is like a gym, if you will. You have to use it to be of value to anyone. And so it's very hard to get people to use CRMs, and it's a system of record, mm-hmm. keeping track of who sent what to whom and how. And that's needed, and it's a good idea. It's like you should go to the gym. But we're in the other end. We're more like banana pudding, if you will, if you mentioned the barbecue earlier. We're the banana pudding, which is in barbecue restaurants. I believe they count as a vegetable, do they not? That with the sweet tea. So you want some sweet tea and some banana pudding. So we have, and it's much easier. And by way of analogy, it's kind of like getting somebody to eat Brussels sprouts, which is to use CRM. And the market was crowded and mature, and people barely got an ROI. And we're selling people barbecue, sweet tea, and banana pudding.
Ah, I like that.
I can speak in my Labor Day vernacular.
I like that. Good. All right. So now we've got to the banana pudding, and I'm not sure how we got there, but we'll come back to that.
Is that a little bit of drool on your face?
Yeah. Well, I'm down 60 pounds right now from Weight Watchers, and bananas are not. There's no points to bananas.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to extrapolate that out to there's no points in banana pudding. So I'm
not a deal.
There's a little sugar there.
Yeah. You can take your counsel. I mean, if they're on the with the salad bar, they've got to be like a salad.
That's exactly right. Good. All right, Lisa, you've heard a lot of, been working with Richard now for 6 years
mm-hmm.
from Phoenix.
Yeah.
Phoenix, interesting.
Scottsdale.
Oh, Scottsdale, actually, yeah.
Yes.
Actually, my wife just got back from Scottsdale.
Oh,
close,
yeah?
But very different location.
Thank you. Yes, indeed.
I've heard
indeed.
That. Actually, she said that. My wife
very
was sharing
much.
That with
yes.
me.
Yes.
But it's a dry heat. I know it's a dry heat. It's been a long, hot summer here in Atlanta. But when I was hearing from her, as a sidebar, people were opening up their steel gates with hot pads because it's so hot at 105 in the sun. You burn your hand. I was like, yeah, I'm okay with this humid heat.
Yeah, the whole dry thing. No,
hot is not so good.
Yeah, not so good, especially in the summer.
Yeah. So we know Scottsdale, not Phoenix.
Scottsdale.
And so Clark. 6 years working with Richard, hearing all about things like banana pudding and other analogies,
yeah.
I'm sure we're going to hear about.
So it's been entertaining 6 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us, Lisa, how did you get into the space and how did you get into the CRM space? I guess we'll come back.
Yeah, and Richard doesn't say it, but Richard, and it's interesting because Richard is, been named like the father of CRM. So Richard had mm-hmm. For years and years, this whole CRM. So he worked with salespeople. And besides selling himself for so many years. So he saw a lot of the issues. And I kind of came from a similar area where I was dealing with a product that kind of fit with CRM. that shared, you know, best practices between sales and marketing. Was starting to understand that it was more about best practices and those things versus just your process and your standard sales skills that would make it. So as Richard said, you know, we kind of got together about 6 years ago and said, okay, we were both kind of moving to that same spot and saying there's more to this, and sales is changing dramatically with the internet. We need to, you know, get into something that promotes it. So, yeah, that's kind of what we did. Yeah.
And so now you've been running and working with Lead Life for a while now. Mm-hmm. And Lead Life, as we talked about a little bit earlier, is capitalizing on a space. Well, I'll let you speak about that. So, because I think it's you have a unique story as we think about the marketing automation space, and it's come out of the internet, the changing in buyers' behavior and selling, and the required need of changing selling behavior. And so, how are you capitalizing? How's Lead Life doing that?
Big time, yeah. So, as a matter of fact, I was just reading a Harvard Business Review article. It was like last week, maybe, or something. And in that, they had a study done by the Corporate Executive Board that said basically B2B buyers are doing 60% of their buying by themselves online, not engaging with the vendor. So that has dramatically shifted the power to the buyer, right? So what Lead Life provides, and we are a little different than you said some of the other marketing automation vendors, we call it brains and brawn. So we have a really incredible marketing automation product, you know, technology, but we couple that with our content marketing strategist. And so they help apply the technology to each of our clients' businesses so that they can get some value out, get it up and running quickly, understand, you know, because this is all we do all the time, so we can get best practices to them, all of that very quickly. So.
Outstanding, because, you know, we had Jeff Pedowitz from the Pedowitz Group on last night talking about it, and I know he used to work with Eloqua, now works with some of the competitors. But I look at also, for whatever reason, Atlanta seems to be a little bit of an epicenter. We have Pardot, have LoopFuse, you know, Jeff's group. Is there anyone else that we're missing here in Atlanta besides Lead Life? I mean, no, we know Lead Life.
There are some related guys in this space.
Yeah, there's somebody that
Silver Pop,
right?
Silver Pop,
oh, my goodness. we do need that gong here because, you know, we're naming other companies. And I know Richard's grimacing here because I'm mentioning the competition, but that's all right. But I think you guys do it better.
We can compete. That's okay with us.
I think those are great technology platforms, but it's really the special sauce that you guys bring to the table.
Absolutely.
Because one of the things that I've heard around this space and actually doing a little bit of research around marketing automation in particular is great technology, they install it, and they don't know what to do with it. And it sounds like you've helped them crack the code.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we had another article reference that was similar to the CRM space. And Richard and I have talked about this a number of times where people would spend a lot of money, install this technology, it takes a year to figure it out, and you're still not, you're doing nothing but email blasts. You know, that's certainly very frustrating. And we kind of were dragged into this by our clients. We were frustrated. Why aren't they doing what they need to do? And we just decided to go ahead and start working with them to do it. And it's worked out really well.
We were invited by clients. They said, could you help us do so? And so why would you ask that? You know, you'd think that they knew better than we. And we helped them. And they said, oh, that is so great. And then we realized that it's not about the technology. First and foremost, this is our second generation technology because the technology has to be easy to use.
Sure.
And we drove ours to be Apple easy. We wrote the product from scratch and it came out in November. And it's worked beautifully, which has allowed us to offer free trials, et cetera. But it's not the technology. Even though the technology is good enough, I can give people a 60-day free trial and with templates they can do it themselves. They're not going to probably get the result that's needed because they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, on a serious note, if you left me in a kitchen, we order some takeout food. We'd be better off, and if it's complicated at all. I get the concepts of cooking. It might not be cold, but it sure wouldn't taste like my wife cooked it. And so that's the point. It's there's nuances. People are not prepared for the new way that people relate, the soft touch one-to-one marketing, where they have to, like Lisa was saying, 60% of the sales cycle is already passed before they engage with a vendor sales rep. And that's not a unique Harvard Business Review study. That's a common statistic. And you yourself know that. So people no longer go to a sales executive to find out about a product or solution. They find that out on the internet. So the role has changed. Now, sales reps don't know how to relate to the new world when they're not the information broker. So I think I kind of learned something about sales by default, coming in the back way, if you will. I started out as a CPA, and as such, people paid me for my time. I was a trusted advisor on the things of which they ask about.
Sure.
And then I started selling software package to other CPA firms. And that was prior to starting the CRM, you know, company they had. It was really was the first one in the CRM space to come out with it. So I didn't know better, and I was logical, so I thought sales reps would use CRM, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, I started off understanding that my relationship was a trusted advisor. Mm-hmm. And in normal salespeople way back when, no. You have a sales cycle, you qualify people, blah, blah, blah. You were the broker of information. The internet has brought us back to the role of the sales rep is he must be the trusted advisor. And they don't know, our customers, you know, some do. And even the smartest ones love us to do it for them because we're better at it. That's all we do is figure out how to do soft touch one-to-one marketing. Soft touch, no power selling, no power closing. They have to come to you and trust you that you know they have a solution that'll work for them and that you'll shoot with them straight and honest, which is why nurturing is so much more important. It's a new concept. We used to never nurture. What's nurturing? You know, right. We used to advertise. But now it's about nurturing and building a trusted advisor relationship.
Interesting, because there's so much in what you just said, Richard, and I was thinking about one concept is the in the way of marketing, you know, the new marketing is customer service in this new dialogue world, right? Mm-hmm. Social media allows for a two-way conversation. And a lot of the marketing, the marketeers that are still in leadership roles now, or are in leadership roles now, really think about it from a one-way presentation, advertising. You think about the advertising world of old, and now we're in a place where social media creates a level of communication and interaction with customers that necessarily the old marketeering model or marketing model didn't allow for that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. How do we address that? And it sounds, and I think of marketing automation doing that. And I think with your what I'll call the special sauce or the brawn with the brains, mm-hmm. right? Being able to help that aspect of things.
Yeah, Steve, I would just, Lisa would probably have a more thoughtful comment, but my first reaction to that is in the days of marketing where it was driven by advertising, if you will, the people had to put up with that. They had no other way to get the information. So that was just the way it was done. In today's age, and you mentioned your social media, it's not only a way of finding sources, but it's a way of pulling down veneers of people who build a beautiful package, but it's just like a movie set, if you will. There's nothing behind the doors, behind the walls. And in the very recent past, with a good marketing budget, you could bamboozle people. But now marketing's become more efficient. So little companies have a shot at things, and honesty is crucial because the blogs, they may not sell your product, but they'll destroy your business if you're doing a bad job. So social media can be a positive, but it'll at least be a negative if you're doing a bad job. So it might not necessarily help you, but it absolutely will hurt you, which is why advertising can't overcome a sloppy product or sloppy service, or if your product is mispriced or underfeatured, and you just can't overcome it with the advertising because they go, that's interesting. Then they do a Google search and they find all your competitors. And so if you've made misrepresentations or your people say, and those people are turkeys, their product could be good, but you can never, we pick up customers that come to us. I mean, they fall out of their chair and says, oh, after I bought that competitor, I never could get anybody to return my phone call. And they're floored that we have this high-touch approach after the sale. So anyway, this social media has multiple roles in today's sales cycle, cannot be dismissed. Advertising still plays a role, but not what it used to be.
Not what it used to be.
Well, I've got a question for you regarding how your product maybe can help with this idea of being a trusted advisor. We hear that a lot. People say the sales, you know, methodology has changed and you need to be that trusted advisor. But at the same time, getting to be that trusted advisor, right? How do you get there? Because there's so much noise out there. Everybody's gotten the idea, I need to be the trusted advisor. We have executives come in here all the time and they talk about, hey, we have needs for products and services, but we've got, you know, a couple hundred people every month pinging us through email, phone, knocking on our door, trying to get past the secretary, whatever, to talk about their solution, to be that trusted advisor. So using a product like this in the marketing automation program, what can I do to elicit myself as separate from the noise and get an edge up to be in that conversation and be a trusted advisor so I can ultimately talk about my solution?
Lisa?
Sure, yeah. So it's really about nurturing strategy. So what since so many people are not engaging with you for a long period of time, but you need to stay top of mind with them as a company, and you need to do it in a way that is part of where they are in the buy cycle. So if I'm at the very beginning of the buy cycle and you try to sell me, I'm going to leave and probably never come back, right? Mm-hmm. So what you have to be able to do is identify where they are in the buy cycle and then provide materials that are relevant to them at that point. So thought leadership pieces, you know, it's about white papers or case studies or things like that that can help them. And so they start saying, huh, this company's delivering something of value to me, you know, and staying top of mind. So they keep saying, oh, okay, they're, you know, delivering, and he's got some good stuff here. He's delivering some, oh, there's some case studies. So I'm building company credibility and doing things. And at the point that you're ready, I go ahead and you know, in kind of initiate some buying behavior to see if you take it. At the point that you take the buying behavior, then I think you're ready for a sales call. So a lot of it is that whole digital approach and understanding where you are in the buy cycle and applying the right material content to that buy cycle throughout the process. So the tool will interpret your digital behavior, you know, what you looked at, what you downloaded, and then based on rules, will make a decision of what you should get next. How often you should get it? Where should you go? Should we score you? You know, are you getting engaged or not? Should we send an alert to Andy? You know, is he ready to call you? So it kind of manages that entire process for you.
Yeah, just to add to that, our tool in Lead Life, you know, we believe there's two components. There's the tool, which we call the brawn, the technology. And then, of course, there's the people, which we call the brains, is what she's referring to, those little nuances that you have to do. But it's about a real acid test of how effective you are at nurturing. Do you have companies that are using a competing product that continue and to look forward to receiving your emails? And we were kind of astounded to find out that some of the people on our email list have been using a competitive product for years. We find this out because after years, they will actually, some of them will pick up and convert to us. And they said, I've really been following your company and your product for years. Not because they were interested in our company and our product. They were not. They were interested in that nurturing message, which was relevant to their specific needs. Mm-hmm. So we have educated them, nurtured them, we were thought-provoking for them, gave them new ideas, and out of that became a trusted advisor relationship, good enough that people who have a competing product continue to follow us. To me, I was really, really impressed with that we have a pretty strong following of people who bought competitive offerings.
Because you're actually bringing value to them through mm-hmm. the nurture campaign
exactly.
in a way that establishes that yourself as a trusted advisor.
Exactly.
Because you weren't really selling at that point. You just right. keep bringing value.
You got it.
Like a pay it forward type thing. Interesting.
Exactly. Yep.
Interesting. That's so, exactly. And then you talk about that digital profile, digital style that they have. Can you say mm-hmm. more about that? Because it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's what they're interested in. They say that if you, and I may be not a good person, it's been said to me, I would be more interesting if I went to cocktail parties and talked about you. You know, there's a country song, want to talk about me, want to talk about me, not talk about you, your mama and your sister. And you know the song I'm referring to. It's a very funny song. But in marketing, since they can leave you, they're just a, you know, digital click away from unsubscribe. It's about asking them or being relevant to them. So it's foolish to say, please, Steve, fill out this questionnaire of what you're interested in and we'll send you information. That ain't happening, okay?
Absolutely.
So what you have to do is you have to put very discreetly your landing pages, everything that you engage with them, points of interest. And if they click on this, he might be interested in that. And you verify that by giving more about that particular area. So the goal is not to shotgun somebody. It is to rifle shot them with very targeted information about that which they have a perceived interest in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's only so many things in any product that people would be interested in, you know, why they would use it. And so your marketing, your website should be focused to determine by what you click on, what are the reasons why you're interested in this product? What is of interest to you? Now, if I'm going to earn your respect, and this is really probably one of the biggest changes in sales, is people used to call a sales rep when they were ready to buy a product.
Sure.
Because they knew that we were going to engage. You were going to, you know, call me and ask me for 15 minutes of my time. Would Friday afternoon or Monday morning be better for me? Which was also a figure of speech. I knew, you know, you want to understand my needs. I knew that wasn't true either. But you had to put up with this stuff to get the brochure. Because if I said my name is Mickey Mouse and I live at Disneyland, I'm not getting the product information. But in today's digital world, because all I have to do is basically, and they get annoyed, it's about creating friction. We could talk about that at length. But you don't expect to do a lot to get information from me. So you're not going to call, you're not mm-hmm. going to take a call from me, you're not going to let me qualify you. So it's a very soft touch, and they're very quick to spook and run from you, which is why you've got to set your website up to let them, by what they're interested in, determine or tell you. Not because they fill out a form, but they clicked on this. You got to think ahead. You got to put the bait, if you will, on the website so the clicks tell you about them. Now, you're not accurate, but it's a start. And then every time I send you more, the less I send you, mm-hmm. the more relevant I am. And that's how I become a trusted advisor. And then it's also on statistics as well. Lead Life is a message delivery platform. You know, two sales reps when they get a hot lead, two prospects of what they're interested about, whatever. But we're seeing that, you know, the content marketing is becoming so crucial, which is a big service that we provide, which is finding content, reforming that content. Because people, going back to the country song, you don't want to hear about me. Mm-hmm. Or your mom in Muncie, Indiana, your aunt in Muncie. You want to hear, you know, about you. And so we say, okay, you're interested. This is a headache that our problem solves, this particular customer. So what we want to do is curate information about that subject from third-party sources that says, no, it's not Richard. It's not Lisa that has this opinion. It's the Harvard Business Review. It's Serious Decisions. You know, it's Mech Lab, some of these really thought leaders in mm-hmm. the space. They think that people in marketing are having this particular issue. So all of our marketing messages are built around leveraging the independence, if you will, of third-party sources of information, because that's what you're interested in. You're looking for quantification, not just extraneous, I thought, me, I might be true, whatever. You want me to tell you, listen, here's a case study. They did this and it got that. Or here's 80% of the people have this pain point, 22% this pain point, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So people are really appreciate facts, objective third-party facts, and you gain by the basically by signing the sun on the independent third-party facts, your credibility increases, and they think, golly, you're the smartest person in the world. And then when I say, I think, Steve, you would do well if you nurtured your clients and you touched them so often, I have credibility with you. Mm-hmm. Not because we've talked at length, but because you've read for a long period of time that we've studied all this stuff, and I bring to you all this repository of knowledge. And so that's what we're about. It's really about content marketing, if you will, front-ending the sales process.
Sure.
With making it more refined, no shotgunning and no friction on getting information. Give them a lot, and this soft touch. Don't run people away.
Interesting. So it's the content marketing, because I look at, again, I can see now the brawn, the technology, mm-hmm. where it's really the brains really that makes the special sauce, if you will, that makes all of this work well. Because, and that's, as I think about building and rebuilding my website, I can put the technology together. I know what I want it to look like. But the idea of, building that content is, I'm gnashing my teeth here. And that's really, I think, the part that I'm hearing is that customers out there in the marketplace are really having a tough time with.
Mm-hmm. They are. Yeah. And it's really kind of sad, but we're shocked at how much help we're able to give people. And it's not that we deal with dumb people. We deal with real thought leaders. But we're thinking, wow. You know, I guess maybe because we're so immersed in this space, it's kind of like part of what we
sure.
do. But people need help understanding. They still try to sell the old-fashioned way, if you will. Ask questions they haven't earned the right to ask. Is this budgeted? Are you the decision maker? And we throw up all over that and say, are you kidding? You know, we're about, our secret sauce is using the technology to relevantly and regularly communicate things about your interest.
Mm-hmm.
And based over time, we can have a great return on investment because the marketing dollars were spent to attract, let's say, Steve, you know, or Andy to the site. But if I let Steve or Andy walk away without buying from me, you're probably going to buy from somebody over time. So over a period of time, I'm going to get, you know, my client's going to get a much better return if they engage you at the rate and pace that you want to be engaged on that which you want to talk about. You will find sure. It's fascinating because we keep talking about what you're interested in. Yeah, that's how it works. And so basically, we instead of deals slipping out of the funnel, you know, lead leakage, we refer to it. That's what we really solve is the lead leakage problem where people took a glance, hit the website, took a look, they're gone. As opposed to they took a look, they got nurtured more and more and more, and then they want to talk to your sales rep because anybody associated with this group of smart people probably has a solution that would serve my needs. So.
And just going back to the comment about content, one of the things we do notice, and one of the reasons that we added the brains concept is the brains approach, a lot of companies will buy marketing automation and say, okay, I'm going to get leads now, right? I'm going to turn it on, I'm going to get leads. Yeah. So what we do, one of the things we do at the beginning with our content marketing strategists is we do a content map. We say, okay, here's the journey your buyer goes through, phase one, recognition of needs, you know, the whole thing, all the way through process. And then we kind of segment. What's your segmentation? What are the verticals, product interests, whatever? And then what content would fit in each area? So what happens is all of a sudden you see there are brochures, and there are data sheets, and there are things. The very end, there's nothing at the beginning. So it basically is kind of an education, an aha moment to the customer to say, we need to get something at the beginning here, because otherwise we're never going to get to the end with your client. So we need to figure out the content. Like Richard said, use third-party stuff, write basic articles, some blogs, something that can move that buyer through the process. So the content map really helps a lot.
And the content map really would also then support establishing, helping to establish you as your trusted advisor to other people.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's the whole idea of that. That's right.
It's based on what you're bringing together.
Mm-hmm. I would just add to that and say that one of the things we don't have a problem with is having anybody not think that we really know what we're talking about. Now, after we started working together, and, you know, I'm saying in a sales cycle, they might be a little skittish, but once we engage with them, we start pulling that content map out. They say, this is, it wasn't intuitive to me, but it's like me with the food I was telling you earlier.
Sure.
You don't want to come to my house if I'm cooking, but I'm a good eater, okay? I know what it tastes like, what good food tastes like. And so when we get in front of our customers, we do the content map, and they get it by the questions we ask, and they say, this content map, of course that would work. So that's the beautiful part about marketing automation. A tool like, you know, pots and pans in the kitchen, that's not a meal. That's not a good meal. That's a utensil. And that's marketing automation technology. But you take that with good ingredients by someone who knows how to put the two together, and you have a great meal. And that's what's fun for us, is because once we do the content map, if you will, it's like they say, take a bite. Is this good? Yeah, it's absolutely good. So it doesn't take any credit. We don't have any credibility issues about, will this work? Because they have said, of course it'll work. It's intuitive. I just didn't know. I didn't know how to put it together.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it reminds me of, read this, I think it might have been from Serious Decisions, is the 70% of people that come to visit your website will buy a product like yours within the next 24 months,
exactly.
Something of that nature.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, wow, that really strikes me, because it was referenced in particular around people give up too soon, or they don't nurture in that context. And I was thinking, wow, so really what we're talking about here is if someone comes to your website, they have an interest in what your product or your solution is, but if you don't nurture them, if you don't continue, they may not be ready to buy then and there, which is where the salesperson comes into play, right? Mm-hmm. If someone comes to my site, it's a lead, I need to go try and close it. Mm-hmm. They're not ready to be closed. It's too far in their sales process, and that's, you know, changes the whole frame of what we think of as a sales cycle. Now, sales cycle being from 90 days, and now it's actually, it's 9 months.
Right,
number of that.
Sales and marketing cycle, whatever you call it. Exactly.
Combined. Interesting.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we've had our own leads. We just closed a deal. Let's see, I closed him a couple of weeks ago. I think we nurtured him for over a year. Mm-hmm. We didn't spend any sales resources, but he was just on our nurture list getting our stuff, and he said, okay, I get it now. You know, I totally get you. You brought me in and called us, closed the deal. That was it. You know, so from a selling perspective, it was very, very small. It was the whole nurturing, you know, track and relevant content and the credibility building and the, you know, all that that brought him on. Yeah.
And Steve, more to the point, it's not giving up. There's a time that you're going to, you know, if you're a sales rep, you're going to get fired if you don't make your quota. We all know that.
Absolutely.
Or you'll starve to death, and both of which are bad outcomes. but if you're an executive trying to get sales made, you don't want your sales rep to bang their head against the wall. You want them to be effective and efficient, which means they have to be selling to people who have a perceived need. So the timing has to be right. So to make matters even worse is that when you try to call people with caller ID, they say, I know, I don't need to talk to that guy now. Mm-hmm. I've got that literature. So the poor sales rep is following up, he's wasting his time. Mm-hmm. You can't swim upstream very long, if you will.
Right, absolutely.
You got to go with the wind, so to speak, you know, and can't swim upstream. And so it used to be when you were controlling the situation, the buyer would not call a sales executive until he was ready to get in a sales cycle because he knew that what was going to follow. But now they're buying earlier. So the sales cycle, you could say it's a sales cycle extended. Maybe it's shorter. It depends how you measure it. But they start looking at information earlier, so they're throwing the sales rep off, if you will.
Right.
You know, he's thinking, oh, they're interested. No, they're not. They're gathering information, you know.
No, it makes a lot of sense. Because in the new, you know, the post-Google age that we find ourselves in, right, it's like people are doing all the research. I think there was a number that you had shared earlier, Lisa, that, you know, the 60% of the clients have already done all the research before they ever call a sales rep.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And sales is still looking at it from an older model where, hey, if they call me, they obviously have some interest in trying to do business with me. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily the case.
As a matter of fact, Mech Labs has this really interesting stat that 100, if 100 raw leads comes to your website in B2B, only 4 to 7 of them are actually ready to buy at that time. So unless you can identify you know, the, from a sales perspective, which 4 to 7, you're calling all 100. How inefficient and costly is that? It's incredible. You
absolutely.
Know? So, you know,
especially with a sales talent. I mean, if you're a sales professional, you're wasting a lot of time.
Time. Tremendous amount.
And
it's
you're incredible. Aggravating them. You're running them off. You're scaring them off. It's like chasing a cat.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, you can't get them, okay? They know you. They get irritated by you, and they'll never take your call, and they'll buy from your competitor strictly because you called them too often.
Well, and you're
just trying to do your job.
You used this analogy before, Richard, and I was going to ask you about it. This cat analogy and how your cat taught you marketing. I think that's a great analogy.
Right. I've always been a dog person. A couple years ago, my wife called me, and it was right before Christmas, and it was a cold, rainy day, and she's been playing golf at Cherokee Country Club, and she said, I'm bringing home this cat we'll find a home for. And I said a few choice words that were certainly couldn't be on air, probably should be regretted for what I said. But at any rate, like, what are we doing with this cat? I'm a dog person, et cetera. So we had the two dogs in there hissing. Cat was hissing, dogs are barking, whatever. And finally, my wife, shall I say, she wasn't that smart to bring the cat home, but she was plenty smart enough to get me to feed the cat. So now this cat, you know, she was living in a hole between, you know, between holes 9 and 10, in a hole, is what they said at the bag drop where this cat was living. And the poor little thing was malnourished. And so she was afraid of everything and everybody. And the people at the golf course says nobody can even pick it up. My wife considered that to be a challenge. And, you know, she didn't bite or scratch. And this cat, I've had it for over 2 years, has never tried to bite me or scratch me. And I built a trust with that cat to where she gets up in bed with me and snuggles with me, spoons with me, jumps up on the couch, follows me around like a dog, and likes the dog even. They develop a trust. But I had to get the cat's trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what marketing is about now. If you look at the old days of dogs, if you will, right now, you can get to the point where when I come in, I look up, you know, we live in a townhome, so I look up the stairs, and the cat and the dog will be waiting for me. She's that much of a dog. That's not the way it was initially.
Sure.
And if you come to my house, you won't see my cat because cats are, you know, scaredy cats, right? But so we think, wow, here's the secret sauce. You know, in the old days, a dog, whatever, you come to the house, you're going to see the dog. He's going to bark at you, and then you pat him and your friends. But not so true of cats. Cats, you have to earn their respect. So we tell our customers, if you'll treat your prospects like cats, if you will, do not chase the cat. Now, you'll never catch the cat. The dog can't even catch the cat. But it aggravates the cat, and it makes it take you that much longer, if ever, for you to develop a rapport with the cat. So when the cat, you got to listen to the cat, look at what she's interested in, feed her what she's interested in, and pretty soon you can do anything you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could go on tape it, taking the cat to the vet and whatever. And the trust that cat has for me is enormous. And I love that little animal now. And I never thought I'd like cats. But she taught me that you really, in the same with marketing today, if you treat your prospects like you would a strange cat, you'll be far more successful. And sadly, you kind of have to do that today, because in the old days, I could go in my backyard and I could find all the cats that were in my backyard and you didn't know about them. But right now, with the internet, people do a Google search, you said earlier, and they're going to know where all the cats are and what cats look like, et cetera. So you don't have prospects to waste.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the good news is it's an unfair advantage, if you will, because people are still chasing the cats. Okay, they're chasing them. And so if you come in and just nurture a relationship like he's just talking about, softly, regularly, relevantly, and don't move them to the next step. Just because you want to close them, this buyer behavior map, if you will,
sure,
the journey as they go down the sales cycle, you've got to look at the digital behavior before you move them into a sell type of a campaign. Because they're not ready. So let them stay in nurturing till sooner or later, they're not ready to buy, but they think you're the smartest old person in the space, and you'll get a single, they won't even do a Google on anybody else because they think you, they know you, because they trust you. And they don't need to look elsewhere.
Sure.
And start off
top
a new
of
relationship. Yeah. So the secret sauce is to keep them in where they are in the buy cycle until they raise their hand and say, by my digital behavior, I would like to move to the next step. So you have to think ahead. So it's like, and I would have to say, it's like if we are like doctors, if you will, marketing doctors, people come in there and the doctor can size you up and say, Steve, you got the flu. The fifth person today's got the flu. No, that's not the flu. They look over at Andy. He's got something different. So people don't know. They treat everybody as the same way. And we are very helpful about helping people determine how to treat each, to come up with a proper way to nurture and recognize that there are stages, different people to segment, so that over time we're going to get more cats, if you will, to buy our product than the people who try to chase the cats. It's a simple concept. It's real. you can relate to it.
Absolutely.
And everybody can take their own personal experience and say, when I was chased, I was never caught. When I was treated with respect, I bought.
Absolutely. And building rapport, and that goes with that trust right there. You have to build the trust before you're... No one buys from someone that they don't trust. Mm-hmm. A recurring theme as we get into this, and I think you'd agree, Andy, is that that's, you know, trust is always the most important thing before someone actually buys. So I think about it, too, is it really a compelling message that you're bringing, Richard and Lisa, is because you come from more of a sales perspective, and a lot of the folks that we've spoken to or that I think about in the marketing automation space have come from a marketing perspective, mm-hmm. and you've come at it from a sales perspective and helping to educate, because one of the things that we think about in marketing automation is, well, let's back up. Marketing and sales haven't always played well together, mm-hmm. right? You know, there's been that little bit.
It's an understatement.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as we think about what marketing automation does is really starts to take marketeers and brings them into the sales process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sales is always, you know, feeling like they're getting their area stepped into. I think that creates some little bit of friction. But the world's changed, as we heard and we're hearing today. And so I think about your approach coming in from here's, let me build this content map, mm-hmm. which is really almost what is your buyer thinking? Mm-hmm. What's the buying process? What's the steps that the buyer goes through? Mm-hmm. It is intuitive, mm-hmm. As opposed to a selling process. It's a buying process, mm-hmm. and let's map our marketing/selling approach, nurturing approach, to how they buy, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, and it's very interesting that you said that too, because what moving marketing into sales, what is a big piece of what we offer and we talk about are the metrics, right? So mm-hmm. when we approach a lot of marketers, it's, well, I got an open weight of this. Well, okay, so that translated into what revenue, or that translated into, so we start moving them down the process as, okay, we need to keep the open rate or increase that. We need to increase the click rate. But really what we want to do is move more sales-ready leads to your salespeople. What we want to do is get more opportunities down into the proposal stage or whatever the different metrics are. And so we are trying to move marketing down into that funnel a little bit more.
Yeah.
And then we also, we were talking about sales versus marketing kind of chasm.
Sure.
Right? So we also get into the situation where sales guys go, whatever, you know, don't cut off. You know, I want all leads to flow to me still because I don't trust marketing and, you
sure.
know, I don't want you to. And what happens is when we attach that digital behavior and it flows through the sales guys and we put scoring on it and such, and they start, you know, calling the people with the highest score, they start saying, this is pretty good. You know, I've got too many. Don't send me the ones that don't have the high score because that's a waste of my time. Just send me the ones at top. So there's a nice relationship that's starting. There's some understanding there between the sales and marketing group. And so the marketing automation kind of facilitates doing that.
Now, that's a major aha for me because, you know, having been the VP of sales and then having, you know, getting a bunch of leads from marketing mm-hmm. and then having my salespeople say, you know, this stuff's crap. Mm-hmm. That you just basically you're creating collaboration between sales and marketing in a new way.
Right. And sometimes we do it by its phases. So it depends on the company. When we talk to the company, we kind of see what is the culture there. What kind of marketing culture, sales culture, who's the dominant, you know?
Sure.
And sometimes if it's a sales dominant culture, what we say is, look, just keep all the leads flowing to sales. Don't you know, cut off leads or inquiries and suspects. Just let them all flow. Start implementing this approach where they see the digital tracking, where we score and they can prioritize. Then slowly cut it off. Other companies are like, no, this is great. Just give me the sales, you know, quote unquote sales ready leads, whatever that definition is. So it just depends on the client where they are, and then we phase it in.
Interesting.
Another thing that I think is very appealing to the sales side of the house is the ability to like A/B test or really multivariable test. You
can sure.
Not A and B is a poor choice of words, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You should do a lot more than that, and you need to test like your subject lines, then your content, et cetera, and even different price offers and different things. You can't do that in a sale. Because sales reps are inconsistent and prospects are not homogenous and there's not enough of them that allow you to do it and you don't quantify, don't capture the data. But with the way we deliver the messaging, and we'll propose that we'll take a subset of the leads to deal with the guinea pigs that are not likely to buy anyhow, mm-hmm. but they will show a pulse. So the message that will get a response, like the open rate, the message, the subject line, well, that would be a good message to use in a sales situation.
Sure.
There's a perceived need. And this message, this copy that was good for the guinea pigs will also be good for the live people. So what we do is we treat with respect as a limited resource quality leads. And so we do an A/B type approach, which we share with the sales reps mm-hmm. to show them this message is more successful than that message. It's not, I'm saying. It's the man with the money. He with the peso has to say so. And those with the peso, they're saying they're interested in this. So you should, and you when you call these people, and maybe you'll choose to call people, you just use these emails, whatever, to basically find out how to pitch them. And you call them with this kind of an offer, you'll get a similar engagement over the phone than you as you would over through the emails.
Sure.
And so use the emails to pattern out and test what works, what offers work, et cetera. And it's because the problem is the nice thing about what we do is when we can do things in volume you can never do.
Sure.
Then it's awfully expensive to let good prospects be guinea pigs. And your sales rep's time is awfully expensive. And how you mentioned your sales management experience, how hard is it to get a sales rep to say, I want you to go out there, Steve, and I want you to take these customers over here and give them this offer. I don't think it'll work, but let's try give it a try. But, you know, they're good prospects, but we need to figure out if it's working. You go, are you kidding? I'm paid a commission. I'm going to use my best judgment. I'm going to pitch them the way I think they should be, which is sometimes wrong.
Absolutely.
So as opposed to using marketing to say, Steve, sell it as you want to because you will anyhow. But this message is resonating. These people are raising their hand. What they like about it is we do push all the data we capture, not some. Every single digital behavior is pushed to the CRM system of their choice. So mm-hmm. we integrate with all the major CRM, even have a mini CRM system built into the application. But the sales rep, is not. We don't ask them to trust me. These are good leads. These are good leads because of so-and-so. And yes, you got a sales rep alert, and he said, well, why did I get that alert? Well, because they did this digital behavior, because we were auto trailing all that stuff. And they
right.
go, oh, that's really real. Maybe I should have them sooner or later. Yeah, I don't want to get an alert when this happens because that's not really meaningful. So we quantitatively determine what is really going to make a sale happen. So like one of the things that I'm real big on is to say when you measure sales, if you just look at the sales you make, and salespeople look like this, or, you know, this, you know, these parameters and whatever, and this kind of a company, this number of employees in this industry, maybe that's not true. If you look at the companies that bought, it is true.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have a super salesman at power close people that never should have bought. Or you got a horrible salesman that basically, what did you do to offend these people because they were such a good fit? So what we like to do is pull back a notch because I'm trying to increase the volume of my test data, right? So we have what's called an ideal prospect profile.
Sure.
And what we do is we look at the digital behavior, not that people download all the white papers. Maybe that was just chasing rabbits. Maybe they were college kids or something.
Sure.
They weren't your buyers. But we look at those who get, we like to use like a cutoff. Either you got a sales rep alert, you got over so many points in scoring, you got promoted to CRM, you got into the sales forecast, or some combination of the above.
Mm-hmm.
But not just the closed deals, because when you do just the closed deals, you introduce the success of the sales rep, the fact that he had time to work these deals or not, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we say is, okay, these people who did get, who apparently were good qualified prospects to buy from us, it's a larger number, it's quantitative, their sales cycle looked as follows. Mm-hmm. We talk about their buying journey. They took them this long to sit around here. They love these white papers. Okay, the one that everybody was downloading, that's a waste of time. We're getting a bunch of looky-loos there. But these particular ones, these are the messages that are resonating. So we need to put our efforts, both our sales efforts and our marketing efforts, need to go around these ideal prospect profiles. Companies that like this are likely to buy. It's not an opinion. It's a hard fact that no one can dispute.
Based on the analysis that you've already done, based on the data that they have for your customers.
Yeah, and they can see it, and they accept it as a true fact. And they go, wow. Because sales reps, they don't want to argue with marketing, and marketing wants to be respected. We've done a real good job of bridging them and respecting them. But, you know, they're going to do what they got to do to feed their family, the sales executive.
Sure.
And they are opinionated. Otherwise, they couldn't stand the rejection of being a salesman. So they're hard, if you will, to get to accept something on faith. And maybe they're smart not to accept things on faith. Especially in the past when marketing people didn't understand the sales process.
Absolutely.
And you're right. Our company's loaded with people that understand the sales process that went upstream to change the way people engage with prospects. It's not because we thought it was a brilliant idea. It's because the internet changed the game.
Yeah.
And we say, how can we do with things when you can't sell the old way? Well, we got to look upstream. We got to use digital behavior. And then we got to use this, like I say, the ideal prospect profiles. And we're not scientists. We're scientists the way we analyze the data, okay?
Sure.
But we're observing things and saying, look, we're not theoretical people. Like, theoretically, people like this ought to buy our product. Hello, the credit card is ringing by people who follow this pattern. So forget the theory. This is the pattern we want to replicate. People like this, find them, love them, market them, say this to them because they'll buy. And that's what it's about. It's quantifying the results.
And then using that digital profile, the digital scoring, saying here's what we know based on statistics here, how we can collaborate with sales to prove out that number. I think it's a great idea.
Well, how do you unlock the brain of the current sales culture out there that it, we'll call it, let's compare kind of what's out there now and what some companies are doing with what you guys have. I'd say it's a spoon versus a backhoe. I mean, it clearly sounds like what you have is a utility vehicle that's capable of doing much greater work, right? So the backhoe versus the spoon. Yet sales culture we know is phenomenally hard-headed about saying, well, I'm making progress with my spoon. And if I stop digging with my spoon, I'm going to go get the backhoe. I'm going to have to stop digging. I'm going to have to go get some permits. I'm going to have to raise some capital. I'm going to have to file a credit application. I'm going to have to set delivery of the vehicle, which isn't ready yet. I'm going to have to get it delivered, you know, and all the steps along the way, right? And that's what I'm hearing between these two things. I've got my current methodology, my spoon. I'm afraid to leave it to go to this better tool. How do you overcome that culture? What's your process for getting people to see how to make the transition, and is it easier than they may perceive it to be?
Lisa deals with that every day.
Yeah. Awesome. As a matter of fact, it reminds me of a client that we have. It is a we've had this client for, gosh, years. Big, about $500 million. They do folders and files, and they have a sales force exactly like that, where the sales force is, you know, this is my style, this is what I do, don't bother me, just send me the leads. But the VP of marketing was like, we want to do this, right? So we took a very slow process and phased process where, kind of back what I was talking about with Steve, where we went ahead and said, okay, we're going to send you all the leads just like you get today, but we're going to have this digital behavior you're going to start seeing, you know? And so we started educating the sales reps on, okay, they viewed these pages, they clicked these emails, now you know what products you're, mm-hmm. these people are interested in. So don't you think that would make a warmer call if you would call them based on the product they were interested in? Oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. So all of a sudden they were, wow, this digital behavior is really good. It's given me all this additional sales intelligence I've never had, because I'm usually making blind phone calls. So they kind of got that whole digital behavior. Then we integrated sales rep alerts, like Richard was talking about, where they're real-time alerts that basically notify you when someone is doing some kind of behavior. They're on the website. They're on the price. They spent 10 seconds on the pricing page. Go ahead and send an alert. So their ability to reach that prospect increased significantly, because guess what? That prospect was sitting at their desk because they were on the company website or they were on the landing page. And the sales rep alerts are real time. So between the digital behavior going, oh, now I understand what this person's interested in, and I was able to actually get them on the phone, they start saying, I'm starting to get this. I'm starting to like it. So give that, you know, give me more of that, basically. So, we, you know, it's multiple phases to get there, but it and education as to this approach. But they love it. They love it now. They're like our biggest, sales are like our biggest fans.
Well, you know, yeah. Another way is we take the trash, if you will, that they're going to throw away. And you say, you got a bunch of leads that are garbage, right? Mark's been giving you garbage leads for years, right? And they go, absolutely, Andy. You know, they're garbage. And you go, yeah, well, let me have some of that garbage, and we'll just use them for guinea pigs and see if this works. And they say, sure, here's this crap. All these people never would do it. So when they give us a large number, you know, give us trash, we'll turn that trash into treasure. Because there's people out there who are not being contacted because the sales rep, you know, he didn't give up. He quit calling them, rightfully so. But that prospect, when you treat him with respect, like that mm-hmm. cat that ran away, okay, and all of a sudden, you know, you come back, and if you're quiet and respectful, the cat will, well, maybe I'll give you a second chance. And then they start to realize he raised the living dead. So we say, give us your dead leads. Give us the trash that nobody else wants, and watch us find some treasure. And if we can find treasure, yeah, out of that and turn over business they never thought they would have gotten, maybe we have some interesting things. And then they start to look at the digital behavior, so it's not like the cards they kept in their pocket. You know, we don't ever, ever get in a fight, you know, between sales and marketing, or encourage such a fight where, you know, sales reps, you know, have to turn things over. No. Okay? Just like, for example, one of the biggest discussions is around sales reps say, as soon as this person gets a certain point, you give me a rep alert, and you take them out of marketing nurturing and just let me work them. And we say, absolutely, that's what you want to do. And then after a little while, they realize, you know what? What they're doing is very effective, because the ones that didn't take out of the thing, let's leave nurturing going. Now, obviously, with the rules-driven system we have, when someone gets promoted to CRM, I mean, we're going to drop and not give you a price discount coming out or something like that to query a deal that you're negotiating. We've got the marketing intelligence, sure, the technology to stop that. But people realize there's absolutely nothing wrong with continuing that which got me in a good relationship with this customer. But initially, we don't win that. We don't even have that conversation.
Sure.
We just say, absolutely, we'll take them out immediately. And we allow the reps to do it rep by rep. So basically, some reps, you start to
say, give them the control.
Yeah, mm-hmm, give them control. And then they start to, once again, like that cat, they start to sit next to you on the couch because they said, these are good people. They found stuff for me I didn't have. They didn't take anything away. These, you see, that's the problem with CRM, too. CRM is a system done to sales reps. You will fill out this information. You will do that. And, you know, if you don't.
Well, it's a manage. I mean, unfortunately, it's designed or it's still implemented as a management tool.
Absolutely.
As opposed to a tool that helps the salespeople. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing that your platform really helps turn the CRM into a tool that helps the salespeople be more effective.
Absolutely.
And they don't
100%.
Have to do anything either.
Yeah.
See, then,
mm-hmm,
so we're front-ending that. We don't say, you got to fill out forms, you got to make notes. Mm-hmm. We're just saying, we're going to, and we get their buy-in. You say, look, we think this is a series that matches the, like, you know, we have a sales cycle map we're talking about earlier, their journey. Mm-hmm. And we start to map, these are the emails we're going to send out to the people. And they go, really? Don't know how to work, but it won't hurt. And so by involving them and letting them watch what we're doing,
sure,
and they can see what their prospects are getting and did get, because when we track whatever they receive, they can look at that asset and say, wow, he really liked this particular thing. We bring them to us softly, never push, and say, yes, absolutely, and they will come begging, and they will turn over very few leads that they'll say, take it out of their campaign,
sure,
you know, because they know we're not going to manhandle them. We're going to keep them close to the boat. It's like a chum line. We're like a chum line for sales reps.
All right. Richard, Lisa, I'm going to change gears a little bit here. So thinking about, I mean, you shared a lot of information in regards to how things have changed over the so many years of selling. So if you think about one or two things that you've seen have really changed in, you know, as the father of CRM, and I think that's appropriately so there, Richard, knowing your background, what have you seen change? What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in the world of selling, marketing, or selling?
I was going to say, you're probably best at that since you've been, I mean, you know, we were both on the sales side for a long time, but you've probably seen a lot more than I have. I mean, there's so many things.
Well, okay, we could start off with what's been destroyed. I'd say traditional advertising has been destroyed. Now, we work with printers. We got some great relationship with printers. So print media is not dead yet, and we can actually introduce print in our campaigns. So we're one of the few marketing automation vendors still believes that's real. But for the most part, branding is kind of dead. Who cares about a brand? A brand was important when the brand is how you decided, when, you know, you a brand caused someone to call you. You're not calling anymore. You're doing a Google search. So all that money spent on branding is irrelevant. And as you mentioned, so with branding kind of taken diminishing in space, social media has come up. Social media can be a positive thing to get people to look at you, or something you better protect yourself. You cannot screw up. You know, there's a story about Dell got burned by, there's a guy that says Dell sucks, I think, and they have a corporate officer because they weren't focused on customer service. So once again, customer service has risen more set to replace branding, if you will, reputation. And it, in this content marketing, the what's dramatically changed is they don't want a brochure. They could care less about what's in my brochure. They have no interest in my brochure. They care about what I know about how to solve the problem they have. And to the extent that my white papers are objective and I use third-party references, so it's not trusting me, but they're saying, Tom, Dick, and Harry, and all these great people I trust, if this is these great studies that have been done, I'm no different than these guys. So that has changed, I would say. And then, of course, as we talked earlier, the sales rep's role has changed. Once you've earned the right to get a call from a client, then you're down the road, and they're not going to ask you the old questions about, well, tell me what your product does. They probably ought to have seen the demos. It's let's talk about deliveries, how you implement, you know, tell me some customer success stories that you've worked with that have implemented your product that have done similar to me. So the relationship changes.
Good.
It's a much more fun relationship for everybody involved in the chain. But you can't break the rules. Okay, you cannot break the rules, if you will. If you want to sell the way, it just doesn't work, like
so
you were talking.
Break the rules being, you can't sell to them unless, you can't sell, you have to help them buy.
Exactly. If you come in, wanting 15 minutes of their time to better understand your needs, that ain't working anymore. Or talking about, I got option A, option B, here's this price if you buy today. No, ain't buying
that.
That's
working.
Yeah, you know, I know I don't want to see a demo of your product. You know, I want to have a discovery call. on how, and just what's the difference between a demo and a discovery call. Discovery call says, Steve, tell me about what you're trying to, the problem you're trying to solve, and I'll tell you how I might be able to help you. That's of interest to you. A demo is not of interest to you.
Good.
So the rules are redefined.
And I'll add some things on the marketing side, I think. One is, beside the branding and such, marketers are becoming much more metrics-driven, right? They have to become much more metrics-driven in order to justify the lead generation budgets they have, like we were talking about earlier, right? So that's one thing. The other thing is they're becoming much more technology-enabled. As a matter of fact, I saw that, I don't know, it was Gartner mm-hmm. Forrester, one of the, that in a couple of years, CMOs will buy more technology than a CIO. They will be the large, yes. It really interesting is there's a new role coming out called CMTO, Chief Marketing Technology Officer. And because so much technology is being between data analysis, obviously marketing automation, all these elements, all the social media components, everything that's necessary from a marketing perspective, there's going to be so much technology. So it's really fascinating. So the type of person in marketing is changing, dramatically from, like we were talking about, the old guard to
changing.
Younger people that are online, digital, metrics-driven.
Growing up in a digital world.
Totally
right?
different.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So here's another question, a little bit of a sidebar, but I was asked this question the other day, and I said, I don't have an answer to it. And I'll ask this, and maybe you'll have an answer, or it's a swag and opinion. So we saw in the latter part of the 90s and maybe the early part of the 2000s the rise of a title called Chief Sales Officer. Mm-hmm. And then I started to see Chief Marketing Officer. Now we have this new title, Chief mm-hmm. Marketing Technical Officer.
Technology Officer. Yeah.
And what have you seen in regards to the chief sales officer versus the chief marketing officer? Are you seeing the climb of that role or that title? Mm-hmm. Or is that, I'm just curious.
Yeah, I see it all the time. And I see it all the time. And the interesting thing is also people are trying to figure out, should they stay separate entities? That's the big discussion, right? Because of that chasm between the two, should we put them under one person, whatever that person is called, or, VP of sales and marketing. But I see definitely the rise in both the CSO and the CMO.
Really?
Yeah, I have. I've seen that.
I just think it's harder to be, is it harder to be a more successful salesperson? You have to sell differently. Maybe it's easier because you don't have to know the product as well. You just have to be able to relate your product to a customer. But I see both roles changing dramatically, and I see the sales guys are understanding they can't power close like they used to, so mm-hmm. they're starting the war between sales and marketing. It's easy to bridge that war, and it's not bridged upon they went to lunch and they decided they would do better. It's because the marketing person started giving quantified data to the sales rep, and the sales executive, if you will, could see that his sales reps were responding positively to quantified information about who to call when and what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. So I think a merger, I haven't given this too much thought, but there is a psychological difference between a marketing person and a salesperson.
I would agree, pretty dramatically. Yeah.
And so the barrier that has been so pervasive for so long was because there was no quantification of the bridge. And frankly, they did get a lot of bad leads because the objective mm-hmm. was let's just churn and burn, get leads and throw mm-hmm. them over the wall. It didn't work. So the feelings on both sides were accurate. Now that marketers are being held accountable, what's quite interesting is the CEOs seem to be taking a far more interest in the mm-hmm. marketing organization because they realize that they can get quantified information. And so CEOs are more involved in marketing than ever, which is a good thing because we sell to CEOs a lot of times.
Sure, absolutely.
Because they get it. They get that things change.
That's where you need to be. Good. Mm-hmm. Lots of great information today, and it really you start to really pinpoint. I love the cat analogy because I think it brings it down to how the world is changing, and you have to build the trust. Mm-hmm. How it's changing and how it's not, really, in a lot of ways. So with all that said, thinking about someone new, if you're going to give counsel to someone who's new to coming into the world of sales, and you were going to give counsel, Richard, Lisa, mm-hmm. to someone who, hey, I'm thinking about entering, becoming a sales professional, mm-hmm. what counsel would you give that individual?
Ooh. That's a really good question. I would say the first is, it depends. I kind of smile because we used to have this show up and throw up kind of mentality in sales, right? So the first thing I'd say is it's no longer a show up and throw up world, right? You mm-hmm. can't do that. And I think I would have them understand the whole concept of the new buy cycle, that it is the buy cycle, not the sales cycle, and really try to understand what that means as far as they as a sales professional. So I would also, I think, tell them that it's more, it's not about the features of your product. I mean, you need to be really smart about that. And, you know, because your client, by the time the prospect gets to you, they're going to know more than you do potentially.
Absolutely.
So be really, really educated, but understand the market you're in. You know, it's not just about your product. Understand the market. Understand the competitors. Because, again, that prospect is going out learning all of that before they ever engage with you. So you can't just be a, you know, order taker. You can't be a show up and throw up kind of guy. You've got to really understand what your prospects are looking at and where, you know. So if it's thought leadership pieces that your company is putting out there, you better understand what that means, you know. Mm. So from a, if, you know, if someone joins Lead Life, for instance, we have, you know, a bunch of things about lead management, lead nurturing, lead scoring. You should know what those are, those concepts, you know, and how they relate to that client. So that would be the biggest thing, I think, for me.
And I would add, in agreeing 100% what you said, it's something like in the medical field, for example, if you want to be a doctor or a nurse, and it's not sufficient. It's required that you know how to help people physically. That's required, but it's not sufficient. It's having a caring attitude and really wanting to help them solve the problem. So I learned this years ago prior to the internet. Been one of the best, most successful sales executives I've ever met. But he used to say, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so I would say that is ever more important today, that the worst job in the world would be to be a sales executive if you didn't like people. If you don't care to engage in your with your prospects and really solve their problem and look at this as an opportunity to develop new relationships and help people solve problems, you got the wrong profession. Mm-hmm. And you'll fail because people will find you out, if you will. The internet will expose you and your products like that. So the old days of getting away with just, I had a good marketing advertising department. I had good branding, so people called me. You know, the old joke was no one ever, you know, got fired for buying IBM. That was branding, sure. Okay? That's not true anymore. People buy the best solution. So
hey, I'm an ex-IBMer.
Exactly. So, but they used to sell based upon that, the fear, well, I'm safe choice. But the market's more efficient today, and they're not afraid to buy from also ran. So you have to be more of a listener. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Than a talker. Mm-hmm. And in the past, the show up and throw up, you were so effusive and persuasive, and people, you were talking about things they didn't know anything about, and now they know oftentimes, if you're a new sales rep, more perhaps about your industry than you do. Mm-hmm. Because they've been in the industry longer and the competitors have educated them. So you better be a caring person. So
sure.
In summarizing all that I said, the new salesperson has to be someone that really cares about knowing other people and solving problems. It's not about presenting products. It's about solving problems.
Outstanding. I think that's, and on that note, that is just phenomenal counsel to anybody, and I think it just sums up the whole day. It's really to be caring, building trust, but really listening, and all of that said, and all the technologies aside, and that's even counsel that you received before Google, right, before the internet. You think about that, how what's old is now new, right? And it's all at the foundation. Well, folks, I got to tell you, this is a phenomenal, interesting show. I know it's a good show because I start losing track that I'm actually supposed to be hosting it. And Andy, we were both quiet today, so it was great conversations, great insights, great information. So I do appreciate having you on the show. I'd like to think about, in the future, having you back with one of your customers on here, talking about how it's impacted them, because I think this is such an interesting topic. We're in this time of transition in the world of sales and mm-hmm. selling and marketing, and I think there'd be a fascinating conversation in that regard.
Sounds good.
With that, Lead Life, I love this card, the brawn and the brains of marketing automation, and I bring in that together, and I really, you know, your lead management concierge. I think the concierge, you know, makes it feel comforting that you're going to solve my problems. I love that. So with that, this is Steve Cadley and Andy Lowe from Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. Appreciate it. Until next time we meet, happy selling.